interpretation of Regulation 3.307, which excludes all harbors and bays from the presumption of herbicide exposure, otherwise known as Agent Orange. And secondly, did the board err in denying direct service connection? Would counsel for both parties please note your appearance for the record?
Your Honor, my name is Jerome Wolf. I'm appearing here for Mr. Overt.
All right, welcome, Mr. Wolf.
Thank you, sir.
May it please the court, Your Honor, it's Jeremy Wong representing the Secretary with Ms. Emily Purcell.
Welcome, thank you. Are both parties ready to proceed?
We are, Your Honor.
Each party will have 30 minutes to present your respective arguments. Counsel for the appellant, Mr. Wolf, would you wish to reserve any portion of your time for rebuttal?
I do, Your Honor. 10 minutes.
10 minutes. Mr. Wolf, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honor, the centerpiece of our argument is Gray versus McDonald, which this court decided in 2015. It decided that in order to determine whether Da Nang Harbor is an inland waterway, there has to be a finding as to the probability of exposure. And, Your Honor, no such finding was made by the VA in any of the proceedings down below. We believe, however, that we have, in fact, submitted sufficient evidence to show probability of exposure, assuming probability of exposure is the correct test. And I think we've argued that the test should be as likely as not, which is in 5107B. And the evidence for probability of exposure is contained in the 2011 IOM report, the Da Nang Harbor report, and the Australian report is referenced on page 16, record 1677 of the IOM report.
Mr. Wolf, if I can ask you one question here. When you're talking now, is your argument directed specifically at the direct service connection issue, or are you talking about the presumptive exposure?
I'm talking about presumptive exposure, which would provide service connection, we believe. And we have two arguments regarding that. But the first argument is that while the VA dismisses these reports as, quote, general, they really aren't general. There obviously is argument in all three reports. But there are many factual assertions in those reports that are sufficient to support the presumption and provide Mr. Overton with service connection, including the migration of Agent Orange into the harbor, the fumes from Agent Orange, and most importantly and unique to the harbor, the taking up of potable water, that is the contaminated water from Da Nang Harbor for use in drinking and washing. All of that evidence is uncontested. It's in the reports. It is not general. It is qualitative because they didn't do any measurements back then. They didn't know the significance of this Agent Orange. But the evidence is there, and there was error in not considering it in determining whether to apply the presumption or not.
Well, Mr. Wolf, you have it sounds like to me you are disagreeing with the bright line that the Secretary has drawn between inland waterways and other waterways.
I am. And the reason is, back to Gray versus McDonald. Gray versus McDonald says the test is probability of exposure. In response to that test, what the VA did is seize on the what I call the dictum in that case and remove some other harbors from the exemption in order to make sure that all the harbors were excluded to provide the, quote, consistency they believe should apply. But Gray versus McDonald didn't talk about that consistency. It talked about the consistency of the VA's policy vis-a-vis 38 USC 1116 and 38 CFR 3.307683, which favors the veteran.
Mr. Wolf, can I stop you for a second?
Sure.
Because we're in the Chief Justice, Chief Justice, sorry, I promoted him. So, in the Chief Judge's question is implicit that the Secretary has actually taken some position about this issue.
Well, I believe the Secretary has. And the Secretary's position is they cured the problem by removing those other harbors from the exemption.
Hold on one second. Got to get the rest of the question out.
I'm sorry.
That's all right. So, but if the Secretary were to have taken a position, that position would have had to have been taken in the M21-1, right?
I don't know whether it would have had to been taken in the in that document, which are basically manuals instructing employees how to behave, because it doesn't have the force of law. I suppose under their regulations, they had to instruct their employees somehow.
Well, that's my question, right? Which is also a question I'm going to ask Mr. Wong, which is. The only thing the board cited to in determining that Da-Nang Harbor was not entitled to the presumptive exposure to Agent Orange was the M21-1. And so what is your position about what the board has to do with respect to considering what the M21-1 says about this issue?
What the board has to do and what the VA has to tell its employees is that they have to, with respect to any harbor or any body of water, where there is a question as to whether it's an inland waterway, they have to make a finding based on whatever competent evidence they have as to the probability of exposure. They have to consider that and make a finding about that, and they did not do that. So based on that and based on the evidence that we have presented, and it is evidence, it's qualitative evidence, but remember we're invoking the canon here, favoring veterans, Henderson versus Shinseski, which you're familiar with, and 38 U.S.C. 5107B, tie goes to the veteran, and the statute has to be interpreted most liberally to favor the veteran.
Mr. Wolf,
that didn't happen here. Yes, sir.
The Gray decision is a little bit broader than what you indicate. Certainly, the panel in that case made a number of points in the holding regarding the probability of exposure based on herbicide use. But the Gray case involved a situation where the Secretary had absolutely no logical connection to how Da-Nang Harbor was identified as either included or excluded, or any other waterway for that matter. There was no connection to the potential for herbicide exposure. So, and the Secretary in Gray did not offer any evidence on probability of exposure, as you point out, but instead relied upon things like depth or ease of entry and exit from certain waterways, which did not connect at all to potential exposure for Agent Orange. But I don't know that there's in Gray a requirement for a finding. Gray was searching for some explanation that at least had a logical connection to the potential for herbicide exposure. As you know, Haas was the case that involved whether or not you were setting foot on the land in Vietnam, and or somehow, if you were on ship, was that could that get you exposure? So I think your explanation is just a little narrow. I mean, Gray was not requiring a finding, was it? I didn't read the language in Gray to say a finding of probability of herbicide exposure. I think the language in Gray is a connection to some logical connection to herbicide exposure. Isn't that correct?
Your Honor, I believe they were looking for a connection with herbicide exposure, but I must say that the only rational connection I saw there in that case was probability of exposure, and boy, that was really emphasized.
Right.
I want to emphasize that here now because I think it's the only rational connection that you can make based on that case and the facts as to whether this was an inland waterway or not.
So what is the current guidance that the Secretary offers for determining that connection?
The Secretary offers what I believe is an erroneous rationale, and that is a geographical demarcation between Vietnam and these waterways, and that is they draw a geographical line across the coast of Vietnam, and they say if you're on one side of the geographical line, i.e. the mainland side, the presumption applies. If you're not on that side, i.e. Da Nang Harbor and others, it does not apply. And I respectfully submit to the court that that's an erroneous test. It's based on a misreading of Gray, and probability of exposure seems to be the only rational test I've seen here.
Okay, well, let me direct your attention to the M21-1. The Federal Circuit has instructed us that the M21-1 is guidance only. It does not have the force or effect of law, right? But the Department uses the M21-1 as it interprets its regulations, and, in fact, it did so with 3.307. So now we have, from the Secretary, an interpretation of 3.307 that is very different from the interpretation that the Secretary offered in Gray, and it offers a connection to the probability of spraying, doesn't it?
I don't believe it offers any connection to the probability of spraying, and the reason I say that is because it...
Or exposure.
Or exposure. I don't believe it does, Your Honor, because it's a geographical determination. I mean, you've got to study what bad stuff actually came into Da Nang Harbor. And that doesn't really apply there or instruct the VA to do that. It's not the law. You're not bound by it. The Federal Circuit found that, as you indicated. And it's incorrect.
Okay. As I bear with me for a second, Mr. Wolf, as I look at the M21-1, and this is a new interpretation of the regulation prior to the adoption of this, the department had a different interpretation of that regulation, as we saw in Gray. But here, the court, the department says, through this interpretation of M21, when a veteran claims exposure to herbicides during service aboard a Navy or Coast Guard ship, establish exposure on a presumptive basis if, while the veteran was aboard, and it goes on to say, evidence shows the ship operated on the inland waterways of the Republic of Vietnam, such as river patrol boats, operated temporarily on the inland waterways of the Republic of Vietnam, docked to a pier or shore of the Republic of Vietnam, and goes on. And all of these, it seems to me, suggest some connection to potential exposure, much different than the previous interpretation that the department was offering.
But, Your Honor, it's our position that the definition of inland waterway, as stated in Gray, was either ambiguous or vague. So the question is, yes, presence in an inland waterway is an issue, but what's an inland waterway? Is Da Nang Harbor an inland waterway? And the probability of exposure to Da Nang Harbor determines whether it's an inland waterway or not. So I don't know that that's inconsistent with what you just read me. The problem I had with the manual is that it drew this geographical demarcation to determine who deserves the presumption and who doesn't, rather than really addressing what's an inland waterway and what isn't.
Can we, the court, can we actually even review the M21-1 here? I realize what the Chief Judge just read to you, but my view of this is that after Gray and DAV from the Federal Circuit, as strange as this is, the M21-1 isn't binding on the board, which means the board has to make a determination in any individual case whether a harbor qualifies. And in this case, the board didn't tell us what it did other than cite to the M21-1. So are we even able in this case to get to whether the M21-1 adopts a viable, quote, rule, or is this a case where the board simply didn't do its job of explaining why it reached the conclusion it did?
Number one, the M21-1 is not a rule. It is just an instruction to employees, like telling them to turn off the lights at night. What I'm saying is the VA made a mistake here in not making that finding. Now, we're saying...
So you said the VA, okay?
Yeah.
We're reviewing the board, so are you? You said because this is a big issue. The way that the chief judge has framed this, with reading from the M21-1, we're focusing on that. But we're actually reviewing what the board did in this case. So, is the issue that we can rule on that the board member here failed to make the finding that you're suggesting?
That is exactly correct, Your Honor. I agree with that. The board erred there. And I think you can do two things. I think you can make a finding based on the uncontested evidence that the presumption applies for the reasons I indicated, or remand this back to the board and tell the board they have to determine whether Da Nang Harbor is an inland waterway. Either way. I want to, in the time if I may, unless you have other questions, move on to individual exposure. We believe that it is uncontested that Mr. Overton was exposed. We produced a doctor, Michael Sokol, who was trained at Walter Reed Hospital, an expert in diabetes and the kind of diseases that Mr. Overton has, and which are Agent Orange presumptive diseases, and he found one that was exposure because Mr. Overton had headaches the two times he was in Da Nang Harbor, which abated when he left Da Nang Harbor. Two, he relied on the factual assertions in these reports, and we should make no mistake about it. There were factual assertions in the reports, albeit qualitative, which could be relied on as likely as not to determine whether Mr. Overton was exposed. He had no genetic predilection to diabetes mellitus 2 and ischemic heart disease from which he suffers. And
both of which are on the list for presumptive exposure as well, right?
Pardon me?
Both of which are on the list for presumptive
exposure. Yes, they are. Right. Yeah, his diseases are on the list for presumptive exposure. And so we believe that the board erroneously failed to find that Mr. Overton was personally exposed and erroneously denied him service connection.
So you're talking about direct exposure, direct connection now, direct service connection now, right?
Yeah, well, we believe that given the canon favoring veterans, and the as likely as not standard, the tie goes to the veteran, he was exposed. And the fact that he had headaches while he was in the harbor twice is evidence of exposure. And while they didn't understand what was happening to him then, we understand what's happening to him now, and he later developed these diseases.
Mr. Wolf, how was he directly exposed?
Well, he was directly exposed in many ways. The ships took up potable water for drinking and washing, and his ship was a ship that was providing fire support to the Marines in and around Da Nang Harbor and to take out a missile site. And so they were within 1 to 2 nautical miles of land when they operated, and he clearly was exposed. You know, we can't say, because there were no precise measurements, that he actually took in some of this stuff. But we can comply with the as likely as not test to say there is evidence that there is opportunity for exposure and there is evidence he was, in fact, exposed.
But I'm still struggling with what is that evidence?
The evidence are is that is all the migration of bad stuff into Da Nang Harbor, the potable water use, and the fact he had symptoms of exposure, his headaches.
Could that not have been because of the bombardments, say, as an example?
No. Dr. Sokol's report indicated that Dr. Sokol believes that it was evidence of, quote, industrial exposure, which really means dioxin and Agent Orange. So that's what we are relying on. I want to make one last point, and that is we believe his equal rights under the Constitution were denied because there's no rational distinction between those on mainland Vietnam and those on these ships. If you look at the IOM report, the record at 1679, it says they don't know whether Da Nang Harbor was more or less contaminated than Vietnam. And if you look at the IOM report, it applied an erroneous standard by saying they couldn't say for certain whether these sailors were exposed, and certainty is not the test. So if you don't know one either way who was exposed more, it seems to me there's no rational distinction between Patrick Overton and those who set foot in Vietnam. And I think my time is up, and I thank you for your attention, especially the questions. I enjoy those. Thank you.
Chief, could I ask a question?
Mr. Wolf?
Mr. Wolf?
Judge Peach has a question for you.
Sure.
Yes. Mr. Wolf, you mentioned that the the standard of proof for the IOM study was, could you tell me what that was again?
Yeah, the standard of proof, as I read it, it's in the record on I believe either 1679 or 1680, and they said they couldn't say for certain whether people like Mr. Overton were exposed, and to me, that's the wrong standard to apply if, in fact, the VA was relying on the 2011 report and that standard.
But where are you getting your standard from?
5107B, as likely as not.
But isn't that a standard for adjudication? And this is a scientific report.
Well, I'm saying the scientific report should not be used for adjudication because it recites the wrong, to the extent it recites the standard. I am citing my standard as the standard for adjudicating Mr. Overton's claim.
But wouldn't this study be used, wouldn't this study be used to determine by the board that there was or was not a probability of exposure so that they could determine whether Da Nang Harbor was an inland waterway?
I absolutely agree, and I think the study demonstrates there was a probability of exposure. I think the conclusion they cited in the study was wrong, that the certainty was the standard. But there are plenty of factual assertions that are uncontested regarding exposure to Da Nang Harbor. And we believe they were sufficient for the presumption to apply.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Wolf.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Wong?
May it please the Court, Your Honors, the Secretary's current interpretation of its own regulation regarding the line delineating between inland waterways and offshore waters under 38 CFR 3.307 is reasonable and not inconsistent with the regulation as it is based on the probability of exposure to Agent Orange. Both the Federal Circuit and this Court have reaffirmed the fact that the Secretary has authority to interpret its own regulation, and this Court has already indicated that the probability of exposure constituted a reasonable basis for an interpretation that is not inconsistent with the regulation.
So the interpretation is in the M21-1?
We believe the interpretation there's evidence of the interpretation within the M21-1, but it is formally provided before the Federal Circuit in the Gray case.
Take me through that again, then. So, first of all, in baby steps for me,
sure.
Right? We review the board, right?
That's right.
So the board here didn't wrestle at all with whether not denying harbor should be considered under the presumption, it cited only to the M21-1 and its decision, its position, right?
Right. So our understanding of that is that the board, in discerning the meaning of the VA regulation, which was ambiguous, applied the canons of interpretation that this court applies, including our deference as afforded by Haas and Gray.
Stop. The board applied our deference?
They applied the canons of interpretation in the same way and looked to what the Secretary's interpretation of the regulation was, which was evidenced within the M21-1.
But our deference does not apply at all to an administrative agency's interpretation of its own rules, right? Our does not.
Respectfully, our deference applies to the Secretary's interpretation of a regulation.
No. Our deference applies when a court is considering an agency's interpretation of its own ambiguous regulation. You with me so far?
I understand. Yes.
Okay. The board would never apply the doctrine of our. I mean, if you have a case in which our is applied by an administrative agency itself, you should let us know that, because I don't think such a case exists.
What we believe occurred here was the board was looking to determine what the Secretary's interpretation of its own regulation was, and it looked to the M21 as evidence of the Secretary's interpretation of its own regulation, which was, in fact, correct, because this was indeed the Secretary's interpretation.
So then how is the M21-1 not binding, Ben? I mean, was it possible for the board to say in this case, I understand that all harbors are categorically excluded under the M21-1, but I will rule differently? Would it have been possible for the board to do that in this case?
In our view, it would have been possible, but we believe that the board would have been incorrect in making that determination, because it would be making a finding that was contrary to the Secretary's interpretation of its own regulation.
Then how could the Department of Justice have stood before the Federal Circuit and said the M21-1 is not binding? If you say, right, that the board would have been in error if it went against what the Secretary said in the M21-1, that's just sort of legalese for saying the board is bound by this, because if they don't follow it, they're wrong.
Respectfully, Your Honor, we do not believe that the M21 is binding on the board, but the interpretation provided by the Secretary, which is consistent with what is within the M21, should have looked to that, and it did properly look to that. That is formally provided for the Federal Circuit in Gray, but it is also evidence in a bunch of non-binding sources, such as the M21, a publicly released fact sheet, a memorandum for change, and all these different sources.
There are certain things that do categorically bind the board, right?
That's correct.
If the Secretary wanted to bind the board, why wouldn't the Secretary do something in a way that formally binds the board? I mean, that would seem to be the most logical way to bind the board, wouldn't it?
It may be the most logical way to bind the board, but respectfully, we don't believe that issue of the Secretary's discretion and what he decides to do is really before this court at this time. The Secretary has the discretion to decide how it wants to implement its interpretations and policies, and we believe that it did so here, specifically formally through the discussion before the Federal Circuit in Gray, but in these informal methods through the M21, the publicly released fact sheet, and even publishing it on the VA public website.
So in this case, I can't find you citing our in any of your briefs.
That's correct, and we believe the reason for that was we were directly responding to opposing counsel's briefing in this regard.
So you didn't make the argument that this court must afford our deference to anything, did you?
We are presenting that argument here that Auer is relevant specifically because it has already been applied by the Federal Circuit in Haas and this court in Gray to indicate that Auer deference is the relevant standard by which we should determine whether or not the Secretary's interpretation of its own regulation warrants deference.
Why shouldn't we say that you waived the argument that Auer applies because you didn't make it in briefing?
We believe that the precedent of Haas before the Federal Circuit and Gray before this court already establishes that Auer is the proper standard by which we should view the Secretary's interpretation here.
Okay, so, Mr. Wong, in what different forms does the Secretary provide its interpretation of the regulation?
Well, in this case, I think it's provided as evidence of its interpretation, many different non-binding forms, including a memorandum for change for the M21, the changes to the M21 itself. There was a publicly released fact sheet that included both the interpretation and the Secretary's rationale behind it, and they made changes to the VA public website that also reflected the same information. Along the same lines, there's also a letter that the Secretary sent to Senator Blumenthal that also indicates that it's also discussing this very issue and provides that same kind of rationale.
Could its interpretation also be indicated by litigation positions?
We believe that is the case. Under Risenstein and Auer, litigation positions can warrant deference in that same fashion. And again, this was already presented for the Federal Circuit in Gray, the same position.
So there's no requirement that the Secretary's interpretation be provided in a form that is binding necessarily on the agency. Is that correct?
We believe that our deference is still relevant even if it is not provided in a formal manner, even if the interpretation is not provided in that formal manner.
Can our deference solve a reasons and basis problem? Every decision by the board must state its reasons and basis, right?
That's correct.
So how could the court defer to the Secretary's position? Let's just assume that there is something to defer to. When the board's decision, hypothetically, in my hypothetical, is not sufficient to provide its reasons and basis for doing what it did. I mean, can our deference solve that?
Under that particular hypothetical, we believe that even if the reasons or bases were inadequate, because of the fact that the board ultimately reached the correct conclusion, there's no prejudice. There's no prejudicial error, and the error existing with reasons or bases would be harmless because it reached the correct ultimate determination. Remand for the sake of reasons or bases on that point would serve no useful purpose before this court because it would go back and the board would write the correct paragraph of language and send it back up and there would be no change in what ultimately occurred.
What if we thought that a fair reading of the board's decision was essentially what your opening brief said in the case, which is, of course the board did what it did because it's bound by the M21-1. What if we read the board's decision as most naturally being read that the board member believed he was bound by the M21-1. Now, what if we were to say, we're remanding because, board member, remember, you're not bound by it because that's what the government's position was before the Federal Circuit, and therefore consider again your decision and explain to us why you'll either follow the M21-1 or not.
Again, we don't believe that there would be any prejudice in that situation because of the fact that the Secretary has presented its formal position before the Federal Circuit in Gray. It seems as if there's no dispute as to whether or not the Secretary has provided a formal position on this point. And again, we believe it would go back down to the board. The board would write another paragraph that perhaps cites to the Federal Circuit decision in Gray, perhaps cites to some of these other non-binding sources, and ultimately results in the same determination. So as a result, we believe that there would be harmless error in that case.
So let me direct your attention to page 8 of the record before the agency, Mr. Wong. In the fourth paragraph.
Yes.
Beginning with what constitutes?
Mm-hmm.
Right? As I read that paragraph, the board is relying on, as Judge Allen pointed out, the M21-1 to support its decision. Is that reasons and basis enough?
Again, Your Honor, on the reasons or basis point, we believe that there would be harmless error on that point. However, if we would look at this paragraph, it indicates that the board has historically referred to the VA adjudication manual for interpretive guidance. So again, we believe that what the board did was it looked to the manual for guidance as to what the Secretary's interpretation of its own regulation was, and they were correct in determining that it was indeed to make this determination as a presumption.
I need to go back to your harmless error point.
Sure.
Because I think, and I don't mean this pejoratively against you personally, but as an institution, that argument leads to the conclusion that the department is engaged in a massive bait and switch. And let me explain to you why. The department stood up before the Federal Circuit and said, nobody can challenge the M21-1 in an Administrative Procedure Act proceeding because it's not binding. And the Federal Circuit agreed because it was not binding on the board. And now before us, the department is taking the position. It doesn't matter that the board treated it as binding or not, because you can look right through to the interpretation in the M21-1, and you, court, have to defer to it under our, so long as it's reasonable, right? And so isn't the effect of that being that the department has closed off a regulatory challenge to something that it says isn't a law, right? So it's not challengeable under the APA. But yet before us, you say, but it doesn't matter what the board says about it one way or the other. You just have to defer to what the secretary says, which then essentially gives it the same force that you told the Federal Circuit it doesn't have. That seems really wrong.
Respectfully, Your Honor, the reason the M21 is not binding on the board is because the Federal Circuit properly recognized that the M21 is perhaps the majority of the M21 is written by lower level employees and does not undergo the proper vetting process before the Secretary so as to be the Secretary's informed view on each and every issue. That doesn't mean that the M21 is not meant to provide guidance or to be informative or helpful in any way. And our view is that the board properly looked to it as one point of evidence, as a point of evidence as to what the Secretary's interpretation of its own regulation was.
Yeah, but you're saying that we could, even if we think the board just thought it was bound by it, we can look through that decision and say it's harmless because the M21 is correct. But of course, you're saying we have to look at that through the lens of our, right?
That's correct.
That's certainly a way to have your cake and eat it too. That's pretty true.
Your Honor, the purpose is to determine what the Secretary's interpretation of its own regulation was, and the board did that by looking at the M21. Even though the M21 is not binding, it can still provide evidence of what the Secretary's interpretation was. And ultimately, that's the issue that we believe that is before the case and whether or not that interpretation is reasonable and not inconsistent with the regulation.
Yeah, Mr. Wong, that's the question I was just getting to, and you just addressed it. And my preface to the question was whether or not the M21 is binding. Does it accurately encapsulate the Secretary's interpretation of the regulation?
It does in this case, but we believe that there's also evidence in other sources, like we noted, of the same interpretation by the Secretary.
So if a board member then refers to the M21-1 in its decision-making, or in his or her decision-making, as the board member did here, and I'm going to quote this section, the manual maintains that inland waterways includes rivers, canals, estuaries, and delta areas, such as those on which Vietnam Brown Water Navy operated. The manual clearly states that service aboard a ship that merely anchored in an open deep water harbor, such as Da Nang, Vung Tu, or Cam Ranh Bay along the Vietnam coast, does not constitute an inland waterway service to establish presumptive exposure to herbicides. Is there a logical distinction based on possibility or probability of exposure to this interpretation in the M21?
Is there? Oh, okay. I believe I understand your question to be, what is the basis for determining what the probability of that this line aligns with the probability of exposure?
Right.
There is. I believe the useful things to look at here are the process by which the Secretary reached this interpretation. After Gray, the Secretary engaged in initial meetings and reviewed the reports that were submitted by opposing counsel in Gray. The Secretary then acknowledged that he did not provide the clear base of clearly explain the basis of the prior interpretation. Then it considered all of the relevant reports with analysis and input from experts in the field and ultimately reformulated its interpretation based on this underlying evidence that reflected that the probability of exposure based on the medical and scientific evidence was higher in the landmass of Vietnam where Agent Orange was actually sprayed and not on the coast and in the offshore waters. And that is the basis of it, and VA, again, publicly provided this information through those sources.
How do we know that the board member knew anything of what you just said?
I respectfully, Your Honor, I don't believe that the board member necessarily needed to know the process by which the Secretary...
Why? I mean, what if, hypothetically, the Secretary had reached his conclusion by flipping a coin at high noon and said, all right, everything's excluded? The board's decision would read exactly the same way because it would cite to the M21-1, right? So if the board has to make a determination about whether that position is at least plausible, doesn't the board member have to do something to determine how that decision was reached?
Respectfully, we believe that what the board needed to do was to determine, to the best of their ability, what the answer was to the ambiguity in the regulation, and that was based on what the Secretary's interpretation of that ambiguity was. It did so by looking at the M21 as evidence and accordingly made its finding in that regard.
Yeah, but it didn't look at anything else other than the M21-1.
And of course, we believe that the board could have looked at the publicly released fact sheet or the VA public website or any of these other sources in making that determination. But it doesn't make the fact that they didn't look at those sources or didn't cite to those sources indicative of the fact that its ultimate determination was wrong or prejudicial.
Mr. Wong, if the M21 is not binding... but it can be used. It's a factor, something to consider.
Right.
What issuances would be binding?
I believe under 4107, it would be, I can't quite find the language, but it's the regulation, 7104, excuse me. It's the regulation and statutes and...
General counsel opinions.
The instructions of the Secretary.
And so those are binding?
That's correct.
Why didn't the Secretary choose to do one of those other ways of getting the word out to the board members what is and is not inland waterways for the purposes of the presumption?
Again, Your Honor, we believe that it was within the Secretary's discretion to use whatever means he thought was best. I don't have a clear answer because I haven't been able to talk to the Secretary personally about why he did not pursue that action. But again, we don't believe that issue is before the court, as that was within the discretion.
But wouldn't that have settled the question?
It would have. It may have settled the question and made this argument a little bit easier. But ultimately, we don't believe that the Secretary's interpretation warrants any less deference because it was provided for the first time in litigation, formally. If there are no further questions, Your Honors, the Secretary respectfully requests affirmance because VA's interpretation of its own regulation was rational, consistent with the regulation, and entitled to substantial deference in this case.
Mr. Wong, what about the direct service connection aspect of this?
Sure. With respect to direct service connection, we believe that the Board evaluated all the factual evidence and determined that there wasn't actual service connection.
Some medical reports that are, as appellant's counsel indicated, that indicate headaches that may likely be tied to herbicide exposure.
Sure. So what the Board found in that regard was that there was an underlying factual determination that the examiner made that he was not capable of making, or he was not capable, but he was not within his role as an examiner. It's not a medical question whether or not there was actual Agent Orange exposure. That's a factual question for the Board to determine, and the Board determined otherwise, thereby causing that examination to have an inadequate factual premise, which made that examination inadequate. We believe it aligns very closely to if an examiner made a credibility determination. If an examiner made a credibility determination that the Board later found the opposite of, then in the same way, that examination and that opinion would be based on an inaccurate factual premise, and under Riono, it would be of no probative value.
So would it have been helpful to get a better examination, or a different, or another examination?
No. Again, we believe the underlying question is whether or not there was, in fact, actual Agent Orange exposure, which is a factual question to be determined by the Board. If we look at the March 2016 examination, what actually happened there was the examiner determined, based off of his weighing and consideration of the reports that were provided by appellant to him, determined, okay, well, I believe that these headaches are connected to Agent Orange because I've looked at these underlying scientific reports and I've weighed them to be in their favor. That weighing is something that's done by the Board and not by the examiner, and because the Board came out on the opposite end, that factual basis for the examiner's opinion is improper. Incorrect.
Did the Board explain adequately why it discounted the medical nexus opinion of Dr. Sokol?
We believe that it did. We believe that it indicated that it was conditionally based on ultimately an inaccurate factual premise, which was that there was actual Agent Orange when that wasn't shown by anything.
Okay.
Mr. Wong, could you tell me again, what is the Secretary's interpretation of the Gray case?
The Secretary's interpretation of the Gray case? Well, we believe that the Gray case demonstrates that the Secretary's underlying interpretation is for the Secretary to determine and to formulate, and not for the Court to provide. The Secretary is also allowed to engage in the underlying analysis necessary to support that ultimate determination. However, the problem that the Court noted was that the Secretary provided no meaningful explanation for why it drew the line that it did, specifically why some bays and some harbors were included within the presumption, some bays and some harbors were excluded from the presumption. And the Secretary recognized the error in that issue and reformulated its interpretation to better align with its longstanding policy that Agent Orange exposure aligns with where spraying occurred, which was only over the landmass of Vietnam.
So, Mr. Wong, Dr. Sokol, in his medical opinion, indicated that, and appellant's counsel mentioned this also, that the headaches that Mr. Overton experienced when his ship was in Da Nang Harbor strongly, and I'll quote, strongly suggested to me some type of acute occupational exposure. And the Board did not discuss that part of the opinion. Is that a fairly significant omission by the Board?
Again, we don't believe so because we believe the next line is more significant because it demonstrates what the factual basis was for tying that to Agent Orange exposure.
Can you read the next line and reference it in the record?
I will do so. It's R418-419, which states, based on my review of the Da Nang Harbor report written by John Paul Rossi discussing the contamination of this harbor by direct exposure to herbicide in Vietnam, the Blue Water Navy report, the basic information about dioxin in drinking water as published by the EPA, the study is published by the Department of Veteran Affairs Australia, National Research Center for Environmental Toxicology, the summary and conclusion of the Committee of the Blue Water Navy Vietnam Veterans and the Agent Orange exposure, there is compelling support of Mr. Overton's likely exposure to Agent Orange. So that demonstrates that he was engaging in a factual weighing of these underlying reports, which, again, is something for the board to do and not for the examiner to do.
I just have one last question. It follows on to something I think Judge Peach was asking earlier about the choice the Secretary made of how to implement what apparently is his view here. So had the Secretary decided to adopt a formal regulation, as Judge Peach was talking to you about, the public would have had the ability to submit notice and comment, and the Secretary would have had obligations under the Administrative Procedures Act to respond and explain why certain comments were taken and not taken and changes were made and not made.
Sure.
Right?
Yes.
What process is there for anybody outside the department to engage in something like that with what the Secretary did here?
I mean, I believe the process by which a veteran can challenge the...
No, not challenge. You know, the point is, if the Secretary were going to promulgate a regulation, he would have to publish it. There would be a period of notice and comment. The Secretary would have to consider the comments, because if they didn't, then that would be a basis under the Administrative Procedures Act for finding the approach arbitrary and capricious, for example, right? But here, the Secretary does functionally what he could have done in a regulation, as Judge Peach was mentioning, but does it in the M21-1, which the Federal Circuit says is not law, so can't be challenged under the APA. What process was there as the Secretary decided whether to take this position? What process existed for members of the public to provide the Secretary with information or positions?
So I think there's two separate aspects to that. So if we're talking about challenging the underlying evidence and the weighing of the evidence, we believe that that process goes through a petition for rulemaking before the Secretary or a petition to Congress to change the statute altogether. If we're talking about a challenge as to the Secretary's interpretation, we believe that this is the right process, and we believe the Federal Circuit also found that they needed to wait for a proceeding of this nature to get to the question of the Secretary's interpretation.
Right, and that's all after the fact. I just want to make sure that my understanding of how this works is correct, so I'm going to now phrase it differently.
Sure.
There is no way, while the Secretary is formulating the thing in the M21-1, right, there is no way for members of the general public to engage at that moment while the thing is being put together. There is nothing equivalent to the notice and comment procedure. Before a final regulation goes into place, there's nothing like that for the M21-1, right? Everything that you've mentioned is challenges after the fact.
Right. That is correct. But again, we believe that doesn't mean that it doesn't warrant deference under ours.
Right. I just wanted to make sure my understanding of how the Secretary puts this together is correct.
Yeah, I believe that is correct. Thank you.
May it please the Court, first on this question of the M21 manual, and I quite frankly didn't realize it would cause this much controversy. and it's going to be hard to explain to my client back in Boonville, Missouri, exactly what the Secretary's policy is, if there is one, because the Federal Circuit decided that it was not binding, and you can't sneak it in through the back door by calling it a factor or evidence and giving it the consideration it would have been given had it been binding. And what is the issue here? The issue under Gray is probability of exposure, and I saw a very assertive statement there saying that drawing a geographical demarcation, as I indicated, is inconsistent with 38 U.S.C. 1116 and 38 CFR 3.307683 because it does not give the benefit of the doubt to the veteran. So probability of exposure was the test. There was no study done on probability exposure. And once more, I'll assert here today that that manual is unreasonable. Unreasonable because whoever wrote the manual, that low-level employee that Mr. Wong referred to, seized upon the dictum in the Gray case. And the dictum in the Gray case says because they didn't apply the probability of exposure test, then there was a result where some harbors were included in the presumption and some not. So they seize on the dictum of the case and take some harbors out of the presumption and represent the case as holding that there was an inconsistency because harbors were in and harbors were out. The inconsistency was not that. The inconsistency was the failure to review the probability of exposure in determining whether Da Nang Harbor was an inland waterway. And I see no reasonable, coherent, published VA policy on that issue. Nor did the board make a finding of probability of exposure. And I want to say one word about Dr. Sokol's opinion, because Dr. Sokol was probably as good a doctor for this issue as we could find. Anybody who's tried a medical case, as I have, and I'm sure everybody, many of you here have, knows the way you prove up medical causation is the doctor has to assume the facts of the case. This doctor looked at the Da Nang Harbor report, and he could consider the factual assertions there, not the arguments that the report made, but the factual assertions. And the factual assertions is to the migration of Agent Orange into that harbor in various ways and the taking up of it for use of drinking water and washing. That was uncontested. What else was he going to consider? And you could tell him he could consider those factual assertions in coming up with his opinion. And he did. And he made a finding based on whether it was as likely as not that Mr. Overton was exposed. And the tie went to Mr. Overton. And he had evidence of exposure. He had evidence that the stuff went into the harbor and prevented the opportunity for exposure. And he had the evidence of the presumptive diseases of diabetes mellitus 2 and ischemic heart disease. He had evidence of the fact that there was no genetic proclivity for these diseases with Mr. Overton, and he read all the other documents. And those are the kinds of things that when you try a medical case, your medical doctor relies on, and he can come up with a decision. Now, when you try a medical case, the standard is reasonable medical certainty. Certainty mentioned in the 2011 report. But here, it is as likely as not, which is the test, as driven by the Supreme Court's decision in Henderson versus Shinseski that says that the veteran ought to be treated favorably. So I think you've got to give serious credit to Dr. Sokol. If they didn't disagree with these facts and these reports, they should have said so rather than trying to dismiss them as general and moving on, because they had to address the factual assertions. They didn't, and the only evidence before this court and before the board was the evidence of the Agent Orange contamination of Da Nang Harbor and the ships taking up of it. Thank you very much.
Mr. Wolf, is there any logic to the Secretary's line drawing between inland waterways and blue water?
I would have to say no. I would have to say that that was unreasonable. Because and the reason it was illogical is because it didn't evaluate the probability of exposure to Da Nang Harbor. Suppose Da Nang Harbor was exposed more than Vietnam. Well, then, if they made that finding, then they should have found that it was an inland waterway. And the 2011 report at 1679, record 1679, says that they didn't know whether there was more or less exposure in Da Nang Harbor vis-a-vis Vietnam, and the result, the reverse is true. They didn't know whether Vietnam was more than Da Nang Harbor. And if that's true, there's no rational distinction between Da Nang Harbor and mainland Vietnam, and that's the basis also of our equal rights claim. How can you deny Mr. Overton when basically there's no rational distinction between the two, and arbitrarily drawing that geographical line is not based on any study of exposure or anything that's rational.
But aren't those studies really, didn't some of those studies look at the runoff of contaminants, the fact that Agent Orange was sprayed on land mostly, although obviously there's aerial drifts and things of that nature that could carry the contaminant to other places, but didn't all that go into ultimately, as the appellee's counsel pointed out, the different interpretation that the Secretary came up with?
I don't think so, because the question is exposure based on spraying, not where most of the spraying was done, but the issue is exposure. And keep in mind the EPA standards. It didn't take much to get somebody sick. The EPA has a zero exposure limit. The EPA has a parts per quadrillion enforcement limit. It doesn't take a heck of a lot. So the fact that Vietnam may have been exposed more than Da Nang Harbor, which we don't concede because there's no evidence of that, doesn't mean that Da Nang Harbor was not exposed. And if it was exposed, it ought to be considered an inland waterway.
So, Mr.
Yes,
Wolf,
ma'am.
Yes. Do you want, is it your proposition that your client should be awarded service connection based on a presumption or based on direct direct exposure?
Either one or both, ma'am. We'd be very happy if service connection were awarded based on presumption, based on personal exposure. And also, we believe that the Board of Veterans Appeals decision should not stand, and at the least, there ought to be a remand to study those issues.
So to determine Da Nang as a inland harbor for the presumption?
If you determine Da Nang as an inland harbor, then the presumption logically would be awarded to him, and he'd be awarded service connection. I'm not here making a big policy argument. I'm here representing Patrick Overton. That's the way we do it back home. I'm representing a client. And what I am asking for this client is service connection based on any of these theories. And there are a number of them are alternative theories.
Okay.
No more questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you both. The case is submitted for consideration. Court will now come down and greet counsel.
All rise. Thank you for your attention, and this court is now adjourned. going to take a few moments.